Hey, good morning, John. You're watching Deprogram with Ted Rall and John Kiriakou. It's Wednesday, December 10th, 2025. Thanks for joining us. Good to see you, John.
Good to see you, Ted. I like your shirt.
Oh, thank you. I decided to dress up for today's program. So no casual Wednesday, only casual Friday. But I can't promise this will be an ongoing trend. We have some housekeeping to take care of, and then we'll get to the show. As always, please chime in with your questions and comments on YouTube and Rumble if you're watching live. If you're streaming us later, thank you nevertheless for joining us. We're here Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern time, if that suits for live, and then you can interact with us. Speaking about interaction, so next 2 days, let me explain what's going on. So, John, you're out tomorrow, Thursday, Friday. So tomorrow we have a live show. Scott Stantis of the Chicago Tribune will be filling in. Not to say that Robbie might not chime in as well, as usual. And then on Friday, we're going to try something brand new here for the show. And I'm looking forward to this as a former talk radio guy. We're going to be doing talk radio. We're going to have a Discord link. We're going to do the show. Robbie's going to explain how all this works in about 10 or 15 minutes, so stay tuned for that. But basically, you'll be able to call in like we're old-fashioned, like Rush Limbaugh, Dr. Laura Schlesinger type call, and we'll have a little back and forth. And but we're going to, I'm sure, have more than one or two people who want to do this. So we're going to keep the calls short and quick and moving. There could be tech glitches. We tried this a little bit on TMI yesterday, and it was kind of like iffy, but we think we have it worked out and ironed out the wrinkles. So Friday is an all call-in show. We will obviously chime in on the news of the day, but that's basically it. Robbie will explain the logistics. Today we're talking about Trump's big interview with Politico, where he was dissing the Europeans. Not for the first time, but this was a more interesting interview than usual. Also, Ukraine looks like this democracy is finally going to have some elections, interestingly enough. That's due to pressure from the president. Russia, we'll talk about this. Russia has apparently has a lot of spies in Mexico, and the U.S. has complained about it, but the Mexicans basically aren't doing anything about it. That, according to the New York Times, anyway. The Afghan guy who is accused of shooting two National Guardsmen in Washington, one of whom died, was a veteran of a CIA-trained Zero unit under the Afghan occupation government. It turns out he is just one of many people who suffered mental health breakdowns because of the way they were mistreated and ignored after they arrived in the United States. And so I have thoughts. I'm sure you'll have thoughts, John. John, you brought up this important point. Big election in Miami, a runoff election, saw a giant sweep. 60% of the vote went to the Democrat. And so basically urban America is going blue. And finally, last but not least, the New York Times has an exclusive report that says that talked about the internal workings of the White House and how they're trying to deal with the survivors of the alleged drug boat attacks. They're kind of a major sticky wiki that kind of harkens back to the way that enemy combatants were treated during the war on terror. It's kind of like, what do you do with these people? And there was thoughts of sending them to that Gulag prison in El Salvador. They decided not to go with that. So, John, what's your flavor for the first topic?
Let's talk about Miami just to get it out of the way. So, the Democrat won yesterday in the Miami mayoral race. That initially sounds like no big deal. It's a big city. Big cities always elect Democrats. Not Miami. Miami is a solidly Republican city. It's always been Republican. And this is the first Democrat to be elected mayor of Miami in 30 years.
That's right.
And the race wasn't close. And not only was it not close, Trump campaigned for the Republican. Mm-hmm. Senator, Scott campaigned for the Republican. Rick Scott, thanks. And Ron DeSantis campaigned for the Republican. And he still lost. So, man, if the Virginia and New Jersey gubernatorial races didn't constitute a blaring, flashing red light for the Republicans. This ought to, because nationally they're in trouble right now. And with these redistricts, or with the redistricting plans that they're pushing across the country, they're diluting Republican congressional districts and risking a real wave come next November.
Yeah, Republicans are spinning this as Miami-Dade has always leaned blue. That's just, yeah, as you say,
it's just simply not true.
That's not true, because especially all the anti-Castro Cubans. And
that's right.
That was the major tipping point. And as you say, I thought of you because the Republican candidate was not some wanker.
Yeah.
He was a very respectable, solid candidate. And Donald Trump doesn't like to endorse even Republicans if he doesn't think they're going to win. So this came as a surprise to the GOP. Just for the record here, Eileen Higgins is not like a progressive Democrat in the Mamdani form. But to me, the real takeaway here is it's two takeaways. First of all, urban America is pretty much done with the Republicans for the time being. And then the other thing was, okay, this is a harbinger. I mean, we're always trying to read tea leaves, and I think it tends to be overstated a lot of times, but you can't ignore a solid 100% trend in favor of one party. And that's what we have right now. I think the Republicans are going into disaster zone next year. I saw the president's speech. I believe he was in Pennsylvania,
Your home state.
And he was saying, basically arguing that the economy had recovered and that Pennsylvanians, and I guess Americans by extension, are doing great now. You and I talked about this. We will talk about it again. That's political malpractice. You never let's just say you and I were the president and vice president, and we were, we thought the economy was rocking and that but you don't tell the people if they're grouchy and they think they're broke, then they're broke and you have to come to where the people are.
Ted, yesterday, and I know we're going to get to this in a second. Yesterday, Trump gave an interview to Politico magazine in which he said that this was the strongest economy in American history, which is so ridiculous. It doesn't even warrant a response. And he also said that when he took office this second time, the country was struggling with his words, the worst inflation in American history.
Mm-mm.
What?
That's Jimmy Carter.
Yeah.
Or at least in the modern era.
In the modern era. That's right.
I mean, let's not get started on the 19th century.
No, it was economy. Depression after depression in the 19th century.
Yeah. He always talks about that. I mean, look, you always, the truth is, it's very smart to talk about the something, something in American history to a country that doesn't know anything about history. It works. People are like, oh, okay. Well, he is the president. He said it. It must be true.
I've told you in the past, I watch TikTok videos when I'm laying in bed at night. My attention span by the end of the day is short and I go to sleep with these. And there's this young guy who just stands in Times Square or at Hollywood and Highland and just asks people questions. So he'll say, who won the Civil War? And they'll answer like, we did.
Oh my God.
Or Russia, stuff like that. That's so America. Great. Americans don't know.
The thing is that never gets old, that shtick. I think, was it Letterman or Leno who used to do the same thing?
They used to go out on the street. I think it was Letterman.
It might've been Letterman. There's also, This Ain't No Heartland was this Bush era documentary where these Dutch filmmakers did the same thing. And they went all over the country and talked to Bush voters. At one point, they go to like a shopping mall, an outdoor shopping mall, and you can tell these are well-off people, okay? And so this is to say these are not like homeless, derelict, crackheads. These are people driving like really nice cars that like I couldn't afford.
Right.
And like Benz and stuff. And they show them a map of the world. And they're like, oh, what country should we attack next? And no one says, by the way, why would we want to attack a country? That just doesn't. And they're like, they look at the map, but the names of the countries aren't written on the countries. And so they're like, oh, I think that one. And the guy points to Africa. And it's like, oh, what country is that? Oh, that's Iran. And it's like, oh, so, or of course he says Iran.
Iran.
Like, Iran. So it's like, okay, oh, so why should we attack them? And he goes, their attitude. And it's stuff like that. I mean,
you know, America.
It's America. I mean,
it is.
I don't think we really deserve democracy. Really.
No. We're ill-equipped to manage it.
Tocqueville would agree for sure. Yeah,
I think so.
So basically, I thought of you because Emilio Gonzalez, who's the former city manager who lost and had been endorsed by top Republicans like DeSantis and Trump, he had his victory. I mean, he conceded extremely graciously and promised to help the new mayor elect and stand behind her, you know, in a better way than say Andrew Cuomo did in New York or Eric Adams. But I thought of you because his victory party was at a Greek restaurant, and they broke plates as catharsis.
You know, that's actually illegal now in Greece. It has been since the 90s. But you can do it in all the Greek nightclubs in Astoria.
Why is it illegal? Because if there's lead in the plates or something?
Well, no, as my dad and your dad undoubtedly used to say, you're going to put an eye out.
That's true. Pass out safety glasses to all the patrons. That's pretty funny. All right, let's do some questions, shall we?
Sure.
$1 contribution. Thank you so much. Just want to remind you guys, you can always contribute through YouTube and Rumble. And frankly, yeah, we're begging because we're broke as shit. So yeah. Seriously, yeah. Whatever you guys can do. All right. Favorite Christmas movies? Mine is Charlie Brown Christmas and The Year Without Santa because of heat and snow misers. So I just watched my favorite Christmas movie for the umpteenth time. It's Bad Santa.
Bad Santa is a terrific movie. That's a terrific movie. Although nothing touches Home Alone.
Home Alone is a timeless classic, no question.
The first time I ever saw Home Alone was on a flight from London to Washington. I had been overseas doing something. I don't even remember what. And I was laughing so much that the flight attendant came up and asked if I was okay.
It's like you're suffering from
the funniest movie I've ever seen.
Hypoxia induced hysteria.
Oh, that's, my God.
No, I mean, you know, by the way, in French, the name for Home Alone, I know because I was in France when the movie was out, was Maman, j'ai raté l'avion. Mom, I missed the plane. I was like, really? Home Alone just seems, by the way, you could do it in French. Yeah. À la maison toute seule. It would be fine. I don't understand. Anyway.
Oh, my God.
Nicholas Franco's question for you, John. Is it true that the CIA, along with Turkish intelligence, tried to kill a Greek intelligence officer in 1999 outside the Greek embassy in Nairobi? I believe you know his name.
In fact, he's a good friend of mine, Savas Kalendaridis. No, they did not.
You to say.
No. He is an absolutely lovely man. He is a national hero in Greece. I thoroughly enjoy his friendship. He's just a great guy. And he has an awesome YouTube podcast, sometimes as many as four times a day. Anytime something hits the news that's even slightly interesting to him, he'll jump on YouTube and do a video. So if you're interested and you speak Greek, because he doesn't speak a word of English, Savas Kalendaridis. No, they didn't try to kill him. Savas was involved in an operation to help save, protect Abdullah Öcalan, the founder of the PKK.
Mm.
And the Greeks became aware, I'm sorry, the Turks became aware that he was in the Greek embassy in Nairobi, and they worked with Kenyan intelligence to divert part of his motorcade, and they grabbed him and turned him over to the Turks.
John, let's get back to the Miami thing before we answer a few more questions. I mean, what do you think happened there? I mean, do you think this was a matter of my theory is always these days that your biggest challenge is motivating your base, and that maybe the Republican base isn't that excited about Trump / DeSantis / the GOP as they used to be. Or is it just the particularities of these two candidates? Is it a Miami thing? I mean, what do you think? Do you know?
I think that it's at least in part that people are not liking this second Trump administration, probably for economic reasons. But I'll tell you where I think the Democrats are going to blow it, because the Democrats always blow it.
They do.
And Trump knows it. And he talked about it in this Politico interview. The Democrats are going to blow it by focusing on social issues. And people don't like this trans stuff forced down their throats.
No, they don't.
They just don't like it. And it shouldn't
be. The thing is, even people who are very pro LGBTQIA plus LMNOP are not, it's not a top issue for them.
It's right. Not.
There's like sort of like caring about, like, we're going to talk about the boat strikes. Most Americans disapprove of the killing of the boat strikes, but they don't really care.
Right.
And that's something we don't talk about much, is like, what's the top issues that are motivating people? Even people who are like, I love trans people. I only want the best for them, but they don't want it to be a top priority over, say, the economy.
No, that's right. And you know, a lot of my gay friends, and maybe it's more a factor of the fact that they're baby boomers. But a lot of my gay friends say that most trans people do not necessarily identify as gay.
Yeah.
And so why are they LGBTQIAD plus whatever in the first place, when they're actually turning public opinion against the LGBT community?
Yeah, there's some major rifts there, right? Between, like, radical feminists and the trans women, the trans exclusionary feminists, the TERFs, radical feminists, mm-hmm. And all that. And I mean, I think in the early days of when it was just LGBT, I remember when it was just LGB.
Yeah, I do too.
And when it was just LGB, you could sort of, even then there were rifts, right? I knew lots of gay people who hated bi people. Yes. And they were like, you have to choose your team. You're not allowed to be omnivorous. And then so the T's, I mean, I understand the whole urge to build these alliances, but the truth is that's a very uncomfortable big tent.
You know, Philip Blair 9511 just posted in the chat, Cuba is great at supporting queer families. That's true. I was shocked when I was in Cuba, what was it, 2 years ago, I guess, at how strong the gay community is there.
Yeah,
and how many government programs are available to them. It was really something.
Yeah, as Lisa Mojica says in YouTube, it's the hierarchy of needs. And I think we don't talk about that in American, the coverage of American news politics very much. Non-American question, as Freud 6624 says, is the DNC the GOP counterpart in the other side?
Repeat that.
This is a hard one to read. Is the DNC the GOP counterpart in the other side? No, the GOP is just a nickname for the Republican Party. The DNC is the Democratic National Committee, which is the governing body of the Democratic Party. It's just the same. And the Republican Party equivalent of the DNC is the RNC, the Republican National Committee. Foreign question indeed. Cooper Duper 23. I think the regular American voter is sick of the status quo.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of seats flip. I don't think it has anything to do with party anymore. We're figuring out who's bought. I don't think you're figuring. They're all bought. So I think what's happening is that people are frustrated. They have two shitty choices. And when they're pissed, they vote against the incumbent.
Yeah, that's it. You know, it really is about the economy. It's always about the economy. It's always about people's well-being and their family's well-being. These other issues are extraneous. They only distract. And well, I don't know why neither the Republicans nor the Democrats get it. The Republicans got it last time.
To your point, John, the exception is when the economy is humming. Remember the mid-90s when that was the biggest economic expansion in U.S. history, at least until that point.
That's right.
And those wedge issues that the toe-sucking guy, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I do.
The pollster. The genius pollster.
I met him at his house.
He's a good
Dick
political
Morris.
Writer. Dick Morris, great political writer.
Yeah.
Anyway, Dick Morris, they came up with all those wedge issues in the mid-90s, like flag burning and gays in the military and all that stuff. The gays in the military kind of ran against Clinton, but flag burning and, God, like Sister Soldier, all that symbolic crap. That works if the economy is moving in the right direction. But if it's not,
yep.
It doesn't.
That is right.
Okay, so...
Hey, I'm dying to talk, even if it's just for a minute. I'm dying to talk about Trump's comments on Ilhan Omar.
Okay, let's do it.
Listen to this quote. I love this Ilhan Omar, whatever the hell her name is, with her little turban. I love her. She comes in. She does nothing but bitch. She's always complaining. She comes from her country where, I mean, it's considered about the worst country in the world. We got to get her the hell out of here. She married her brother in order to get in, right? She married her brother to get in. Therefore, she's here illegally. Send her back. Like, that's the best quote I've ever seen.
It's free association. Do you remember, John, after the Watergate tape transcripts were released, some famous poet like set a lot of the transcripts of Nixon talking to poetry and released them? It's like, and it was called like the poetry of Richard Milhouse Nixon.
Oh my God. I did not.
This is like, but this sounds like that. It could totally,
yeah.
Stuff could totally be set to poetry.
Yeah, I agree. It could.
It'd be amazing.
This idea that she married her brother has been running around Republican circles since she was first elected. She didn't marry a brother. She married a guy, or she married a guy in a Muslim ceremony. His name was Ahmed Abdisalan Hirsi. They had two kids. They separated. In 2009, she married a Brit named Ahmed Noor Saeed Elmi. They separated in 2011. She reunited with the first guy in 2012. She divorced Elmi and remarried the first guy.
Wow.
There's no,
that's a little bit Liz Taylor and Richard Burton-y.
Yeah, very much. But she's not married to her brother. She's never been married to her brother.
I never understood how these things get out. And by the way, the Republicans are not unique in having these strange conspiracy theories
either. No.
Democrats do it too.
They do it too.
US Triple X A-Rod 21. Thanks for the $2. Do we think that this means Democrats will lean into the economy or go back to social issues that the majority of the country doesn't care about, not holding out hope for them?
That's the question. Are they smart enough to be able to read the writing on the wall that it's about the economy?
No.
Or are they going to try and force all these stupid social issues down our throats?
Honestly, John, if they did social issues, at least they'd be doing issues.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I hear them talking, the Democrats recognize they have a problem. They can't just be against Trump, but they still can't articulate or won't articulate what they're for. And I think it's because they can't agree on anything. But basically they have terrible messaging. They have no leadership. Mama Bear Pelosi's gone. There's no one knocking heads and saying like, listen, all you fuckers, this is what we're going to say. Here's our talking points. So, I mean, Hakeem Jeffries is like more useless than useless. So I think they're going to fuck it up. I mean, no, I think right now they're counting on a sense of betrayal on the part of the GOP who will sit, enough Republican voters will sit on their hands and not
vote. The key. That's the key right there. It's all about turnout.
Yeah.
It's not
Democrats are more motivated.
Yeah.
So they will turn out next year. I don't know how federalized the election will be, like the way Newt Gingrich successfully did in 1994 with the Republican Revolution.
Yeah, that was brilliant.
Absolutely. And I'm surprised nobody tries to replicate it. It's kind of like, dude, it's like Howard Dean and his 50 state strategy. No one tried to replicate. Again, brilliant.
That was the fallout between Hillary Clinton and what's his name from New Orleans, who said it's the economy, stupid.
Oh, Carville.
James Carville. James Carville was the one who came up with the 50 state strategy in the 90s because it had worked so well for the Democrats in the 60s. The Democrats won Senate seats in North Dakota, South Dakota, in both of those cases, all four Senate seats. Idaho, Montana, Wyoming, Oklahoma. I mean, there were viable Democratic Party structures in those states. And then the Democrats just said, nah, we're not going to do that anymore.
We'll just focus on the Electoral College,
Matt. Yeah, we'll just focus on the Electoral College. We're not going to try to build local and state party structures to support candidates for state legislature or for
Obama
state.
Gutted that farm system.
Gutted it. And the Democrats have been paying the price ever since.
They have. And the other thing is, even if you're only looking at national races, which is dumb, but let's just say, because where did Barack Obama come from, right? He was a wet behind the ears local Illinois dude.
Yeah.
But the thing is that the Republican, I mean, the Democratic Party, even if, like, the reason you campaign in all 50 states is even in the states that you're going to lose, let's say you can't, let's just say, for example, you campaign as a Democrat in North Dakota, a state you're probably not going to get as a presidential candidate, but people turn out and see you. And they and other people who are watching back in, say, New Jersey are watching on television and they're seeing your appearances on the internet and they like that you went to North Dakota. And maybe your brother lives in North Dakota and says, oh, I went to see that guy and he was great. And then you vote for him. He doesn't. But you get that vote in New Jersey that you wouldn't have gotten. That's the point of the 50 state strategy.
You're exactly right. You are exactly right.
I mean, Donald Trump understands. That's why Donald Trump, like, I remember, like, when I knew that Trump was going to win in 2016, when Hillary Clinton spent $5 million for her campaign announcement, and she built a stage in the shape of the United States right on the Long Island City so that she could use Manhattan as the backdrop. By the way, Manhattan as a backdrop, not a good image for the entire country.
No.
But $5 million for the stage. And Donald Trump went and gave a speech in some shitty elementary school in, like, in Scranton. And it's like, you know what? You're both on television. It's all the same. And Donald paid nothing except for the flight, the airfare to Scranton, right? That's the difference. And that's why he won, you know, with a, you know, paying a couple million dollars to win the presidency as opposed to $7 billion for Hillary Clinton. Although she still complains about the Russian, about the Facebook ads, but whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. It was the Facebook ads that did her in. Right. Yeah.
For sure. All right. We have more questions coming in, but let's, in the meantime, let's talk a little bit. This is obviously your bailiwick. So according to this report in the New York Times, Mexico is harboring all sorts of GRU spies. Apparently this is a tradition that goes all the way back to the Cold War.
It goes way back to the 50s.
And they claim that Mexico City was like the Vienna of Latin America.
Absolutely true.
And the U.S. apparently under Biden handed the Mexicans a big dossier with, hey, here's all the people we know who are spies in Mexico. Can you kick them out? And the Mexicans basically are ignoring the whole thing. Mm-hmm. There's no word on whether Trump administration policy has changed or that they're leaning on the Mexicans to try to do anything. They might be, they might not be. It just didn't say. But basically, I like the fact that the Mexican officials said, well, we never got the dossier, or it was too vague. We didn't really understand what you were talking about, or that it was lost. People like, someone recycled it. We were recycling. I don't know. So what do you think about all this?
Well, it would be a normal liaison event for the CIA to pass the names of KGB or GRU or SVR or whatever they're calling themselves these days to a friendly liaison service. They do that all the time. Mexico City is particularly important because it is a hub of international espionage. Like you said, Vienna, London, Paris, Washington,
Why
Moscow.
Mexico City?
Because they spy on the United States there. Our embassy is so gargantuan in Mexico City, and so much happens there that they're targeting the American embassy for the most part. And what they probably are doing,
vacationing Americans.
Right. No.
No,
it's trying to recruit Mexicans who work inside the American embassy. It's probably 75% Mexicans that work in the American embassy. Right, because you're not going to – the head of the motor pool is not going to be American. The head of logistics is not going to be American. But they have access to information that if you put it together like a puzzle, you can come up with an entire picture. For example, I was working overseas. I won't say where. And the logistics guy had been in place for 30 years. He was a local hire. 30 years he had been working for the American Embassy. And he's the guy that makes sure that your shipment of personal household effects, you know, makes it onto the ship in Baltimore, doesn't get washed overboard in the Atlantic, and finally makes its way to its end destination. Well, once your stuff arrives, he's the guy that arranges to have it brought to your house. And then when he calls you in the embassy from the second floor where he was based, and you answer the phone, you know, regional affairs or training division or whatever, that he knows is a bullshit assignment. There is no such office. He reports back to his people, his handler, hey, this guy, John, this new guy, he's CIA. I'm sure of it because he's not in the political section. It says in the diplomatic list, political officer. He's not a political officer. He didn't answer the phone in the political section, you know? So they're able to put little pieces of the puzzle together. And when you have 2, 3, 5, 10 people inside the American Embassy recruited, because remember, they're making Mexican wages. They're not being paid like Americans would be paid. Right. And the Russians are supplementing their incomes to the tune of a few thousand, $10,000 a month.
Yeah.
That's meaningful. Sure.
John, we have an ad. Let me, and then we're going to bring in Robbie. Before, but just very quickly, do you think it's true that the Republic, that as being reported, that this really ramped up after the Russian-Ukrainian war started?
Absolutely.
Because basically, we're using Ukraine as a proxy to spy against Russia right on its border. And so the Russians are kind of like, let's turn about as fair play.
I believe that's the case. Yes.
All right. Let's get to the ad. Looking for smarter ways to browse and enjoy your favorite content without ads? Get the Perplexity Pro bundle with Rumble Premium for just $19.99 a month when you sign up before December 31st. Normally a $29.99 value. With Rumble Premium, you'll get an ad-free viewing experience across all your devices and access to exclusive premium content. No interruptions, just the videos and streams you love anytime, anywhere. Plus, Perplexity Pro boosts your productivity with unlimited research, unlimited uploads, exclusive member perks, and access to the latest and most advanced AI models for faster, smarter answers every day. Save over 30% on this powerful bundle. Head to rumble.com/premium before December 31st to sign up and unlock your premium experience. All right, we're going to bring in Robbie West, our producer, who is here thanks to your kind support, kind listeners and viewers, to explain, first of all, what we're going to be doing on Friday.
Okay, so on Friday, I'm really looking forward to this. It's going to be exciting. So we are going to be doing a call-in show. So think Rush Limbaugh without the windbaggery. That is exactly what we're going to be doing. So to make this work, I will post a link in the chat to our Discord server. And once you go in, and we'll put together a little screenshot or something to put this that way people are able to see, you will see at the bottom of the server, you're going to see a lobby, a waiting room. You're going to just park your cute little pixelated self there. I will then drag your cute little pixelated self down to the call room where you'll be speaking with John and Ted. And you'll be able to ask your questions. And then after your question is asked, I will then mute your pixelated cute little butt. So that way someone else can come on in. Now, this is going to be a Rumble exclusive.
Are people still going to come to Rumble as usual to the channel, and then we're going to post the URL?
Post the link. Yeah, I just post the link. They just click on it, join the server. I mean, it doesn't cost you a dime. It's completely free.
So this is so on Friday, that means there's no live show on YouTube. We will post the recorded show on YouTube later in the day. But
correct.
But if you want to watch live and comment and all that, you got to be on Rumble.
You got to be on Rumble. And the reason for that is this is not me peeing on YouTube. It's because I cannot control what comes out of your mouth. And YouTube is so strict with their community guidelines. If somebody just goes on a full-on a tear about a topic against a protected group, you put whatever in there that is that you want to put in there, YouTube will nuke the channel. Rumble won't. So whenever I say that Rumble is what allows us, is what allows this this channel to speak freely, that's not hyperbole. That's true. When they demonetized John and Ted, Rumble didn't. And this right-wing platform paying the bills of two lefties, and I guess me. So, yeah, but
we're working on getting you over to the left, Robbie.
Well, I'm working on pulling y'all over to the right. So maybe we'll meet in the middle somewhere.
Big tug of war, or on the other side. All right, Robbie. I'll drop the link and just, I hope everyone understands that. So just to reiterate, Friday, watch on Rumble if you want to watch live at 9 a.m. If you don't care about that, just you can watch on YouTube later in the day, let's say after 12 noon Eastern. And there will be a link in the Rumble chat that Robbie will post.
I'm also going to post a link on YouTube on a community tab. So that way people can just click on that. All you got to do is just join.
Now, a little warning. We're not going to be able to talk to every, if a lot of people want to do this, we won't be able to take every call, but we will try to take every call.
Correct.
Before Robbie gets off too, there's actually a question for him in the chat. Great. Did you see it? It was Robbie. Do you think that,
The show Yellowstone.
Yeah, Yellowstone has caused real estate prices to go up in Montana.
That's a good question.
It didn't help anything.
Yeah. I mean,
because most people don't think about Montana.
Right.
No, it's just one of those invisible flyover states that you may or may not be able to find on a map. But no, people go in, they see it, they see how big it is, they see how beautiful it is. Mm-hmm. And then Yellowstone.
It is amazing. I love it there. I've been there now 3 times. I've taken my kids. It's fantastic.
Hey, I love it here. I moved here in 2015 or 2010 and it's home. But no, that being said, Yellowstone did a very great way of showing Montana as this paradise, which not always is true. However, the winters here are brutally cold. So Montana is closed. Yeah. You do not want to come here. It is cold.
Yeah.
And there are large bitey animals.
Yes.
There are. There was actually a mountain lion walking down my street yesterday. That's awful.
You bring him in as a pet. Take free company to your cat.
Or anyway, beat him up.
Maybe. All right, Robbie. Thank you very much for all that. And all right, let's resume our regular scheduled programming here. Okay. So, anything else we want to talk about this? I mean, so why do you think the Mexicans are brushing off the Americans on this Mexico City thing?
You know, I think, honestly, the Mexicans are just sick and tired of us. You know, we probably, when we passed them the names, we probably also told them, hey, wrap all these guys up and expel them all from Mexico. We're waiting. And they probably told us, take care of your own problems. We have other things to worry about. Yeah.
And not to mention, you know, when does even a Democratic president ever go on TV and talk about the great cooperation that the Mexican government provides us with? Nobody. Yeah. I mean, it's thankless, right? It's a one-way, you know, they're very cooperative, but we treat them like, we talk about them like dogs.
Yeah, we do. We do. We treat them not just like second-class citizens. We treat them as coolies,
yeah,
you know, and they don't appreciate it.
So they just drag their feet. They're like, we're a real country.
Yeah.
You know? We have national pride. Fuck you.
Quite an important one.
Yeah, a very important one. And actually a great country too. I mean, if you said, oh, I had to live in Mexico the rest of my life, I'd be like, oh, well, okay. Not a bad thing at all.
No.
Should we talk a little bit about the Trump's interview?
Yeah, let's.
So Trump basically, this is a repeat of something he has said before. He said that this is a quote, I think their leaders are weak, but I also think that they want to be so politically correct. I think they don't know what to do. This all seems to be like centered around the debate over Ukraine. The Europeans are leaning on, you know, Trump wants the war to end. The Europeans clearly want it to go on. And we can talk about why that might be. But Trump's really signaled that he's almost done with Ukraine. He also said, you know, Ukraine's not much of a democracy if it doesn't have elections. Finally, you know, Zelensky, who has claimed now for years that there's no way to hold elections during a war, suddenly miraculously says that within the next 3 to 6 months, there will be elections, both presidential and legislative. Bunch of questions, John. Is Zelensky going to keep his promise about that? And if he does, what will the results look like? And will he win re-election?
I think he's done. I really do. I think that, he's going to keep his promise because he has to keep his promise. he can't continue to push back against the pressure from the United States. It's just too much. So I think that there will be elections, and I wouldn't be surprised at all if, you know, he goes and casts his vote and then drives to the airport and gets on a plane and flies away.
What if he pulls an Eric Adams and decides just not to run for re-election?
And I think that's also a definite possibility.
I served my country during war. I'm exhausted. It's time to pass the torch.
And Ted, you know, there's a lot of reporting about cabinet members driving Bugattis and Lamborghinis around Kyiv. It's not cool. The corruption is now in your face, and somebody's going to have to answer to it.
And of course, Zelensky and his buddies are big beneficiaries of that corruption.
Yeah.
So, I mean, here's the thing. I got to say, not for the last time, I agree with President Trump about this. I mean, I kind of don't know if the word weak is the word I would say, but like sort of like feckless would be the word I would say for Presidents Macron and so on. Like, what are they on about? I mean, like, it's kind of like they're clearly anyone with a brain can see that, you know, the outcome of this war has fallen in favor of Russia. It's not like the outcome's not likely to change anytime soon. And they want, you know, Macron and these guys, they want Zelensky to keep fighting. But towards what end? I mean, they're just going to lose even more territory at this point. I mean, I'd say if I'm the Ukrainians, the sooner I negotiate, the least bad deal I'm going to get.
Exactly. And if the sticking point really is just Kherson now, figure it out.
Right.
Right? It's a negotiation.
Yeah. Maybe Kherson can become like a Danzig style, like demilitarized nuclear neutral city, that kind of thing.
Fine with me. Sure. Why not?
I mean, I think, you know, looking for things that the Russians feel that they could agree to.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, and I'm like so many Americans. I'm tired of this. I'm tired of spending all this money for a never ending war. We're going to get nothing out of it. It's time to move on.
Totally. All right. Should we do some questions?
Yeah.
We're a little bit behind. All right. All right. Thanks for your patience, guys. Junaid Javid, thanks so much for the $20 donation on Rumble. Please keep Imran Khan in your thoughts. Imran is still in illegal custody, and the field marshal in Pakistan has gone full fascist.
Yeah, that's my understanding, too.
Yeah, that's, I mean, you know, the thing is, a lot of prime ministers and former prime ministers end up in prison in Pakistan. You know, what's never clear, John, is what kind of conditions they're held under.
Right.
You know, it's like, it seems like, I mean, a Pakistani prison can't be that pleasant.
I wouldn't want to be in. I've gone to many Pakistani prisons because we were locking people up there. Mm. I would never want to be incarcerated in a single one of them.
So you don't think there's any like VIP lounge treatment, first class?
No, you'd have to get on your hands and knees and beg for home confinement.
Oh, man. Okay, so let's see. We answered that. Democrats, Anal Ape says Democrats, Republicans want us to care about social issues because it doesn't affect their donors. True. Cooper Duper, what about Jasmine Crockett's Senate ad? Oh. How does that speak to anyone?
And Allred dropped out.
Yeah.
Just yesterday I said, oh, it's going to be a big fight. Allred's the stronger candidate. He dropped out and he announced he's going to run for the House of Representatives again.
My fellow Daytonian, Sammy Landgren, the problem with Democrat platform is that it's not honest. For example, transhumanism. Most don't even understand what that is. Yeah, I don't know what the fuck that is. That's like intersectionality. Who fucking knows what that means? Nobody. It's like, go into your Chuck Derry doc collection and look that up. Kevin Cronin, PBS and NPR do not represent the Democratic voters. Fair. Question for both of us from Ali. Does the Democrats lacking a message and distrust in Republicans not leave enough of a gap for a third party to come in?
Ah, you would think that it would. I was talking to a group of people last night about this exact issue. And Ted, I repeated what you and I had said, that as recently as 100 years ago, we had a half a dozen viable national parties in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And with so many people, with actually a plurality of Americans now describing themselves as independent, in my view, that opens the door for two political parties, one on the right and one on the left.
Yeah, there's a place for left-wing progressive Democrats, and there's a place for America First Republicans.
That's right.
Because even with under Donald Trump, the Republican Party is controlled by the corporatists.
Sure it is.
We have two corporatist parties.
And there are lackeys like Lindsey Graham.
My theory here is that the problem that with third parties in recent decades has been that they've all had a national strategy, right? Their theory has always been, let's just run someone for president and then it'll trickle down and we'll run people
exactly.
for governor later.
It's the opposite.
Right. Because that can't work because of the Electoral College. Because the Electoral College is set up, you have to have 270 votes to win the presidency. Even if a third party candidate had 70% of the popular vote, he or she would still lose because of the Electoral College, and it would go to the House of Representatives, and either the D's or the R's would vote for their own team.
That's right.
It has to be from the grassroots. And those parties that you mentioned, John, from 100 years ago, including but not limited to the Prohibition Party, the Socialist Party, Socialist Labor Party, and so on, the Populist Party, they were all grassroots parties. They ran people for Congress as aldermen and so on.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. Yeah, I used to joke that when I was doing my little dance with the libertarians, I would get these hair on fire emails like, oh my God, we just elected somebody to the Water Commission of Anchorage, Alaska. It's like, okay, well, that's a start, but you need to run people in like every congressional race, every state legislative race. You got to start at the bottom. The Water Commission of Anchorage is not going to do it for you.
No, but on the other hand, it's not a terrible thing to just, if you have a national strategy and you have, I mean, the Libertarian Party has been around a long time.
Yeah.
They're one of the better organized third parties.
Yeah, they are. Well, listen, I always make this joke, but it's funny because it's true. I was invited to the Libertarian Christmas party a few years ago. And of course, being libertarians, they held it at the end of January because they just could not get their act together. And I think I've mentioned this to you. One of these
guys, I thought you were going to say because they're cheap and didn't want to pay top dollar for the space.
It was in this townhouse in Alexandria, Virginia.
All the leftover nog.
Oh, yeah. A townhouse in Alexandria, Virginia, old town. And we're all wearing "Hello, my name is" name tags.
Of course.
And this guy looks at my name tag and he says, "Oh, John, I've been hoping I'd run into you." He's wearing his tag. He's the head of the Libertarian Party for Virginia. So I said, "Oh, nice to meet you." And I shook his hand. He said, "Listen, do you want to run for governor?" And I said, "Absolutely not." And he said, "Really? Why?" And I said, "Look, I like you guys. You're all nice guys, but I know how this is going to play out." I said, "I'm going to be completely out of pocket. Nobody's going to raise any money for me. And in the end, I'm going to get 2% and I'm going to humiliate myself."
So, and everyone will make fun of you.
Yeah. I said, no.
And the worst part is, I'll tell you the worst part of it. If you did that, in the middle of the night, you'd have these weird thoughts like, what if I could win?
Right. Exactly.
And you can't.
Oh, listen. When I was traveling with Gary Johnson, Gary was the governor of New Mexico, and he was the Libertarian nominee for president in 2016 and 2012. But this was in 2016, and we were in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. And his sister joined us at dinner one night. He had given a speech. I was traveling with him to introduce him at all of his speeches. And so his sister came to dinner with us that night, and she was running for Congress from that Upper Peninsula district. And so I said to her, just because I was trying to make conversation, I said, "Did you see the latest polls? The incumbent Republican is only polling at like 40% up here. That's how unpopular he is." And she goes like this. She goes, "I might actually win this thing." And I thought to myself, no, that's not my point. You're not going to win this thing. It's just that he's unpopular.
Right.
She ended up getting 2%. But it's not uncommon to delude yourself into thinking that, you know, lightning might strike and you might actually win this thing.
Although Yeah, I mean, think about Donald Trump, that great picture from the New Yorker in 2016 when they capture the entire family in the hotel suite, and they just announced that Trump is going to win. And to a man, they all have this, the fuck?
Yeah.
Kind of expression.
I think I mentioned to you that my old next door neighbor, when I was still married, he was the White House pastry chef. And he told us that he was at the White House when Trump went to meet Obama for the first time. It was 4 days after the election. And he said, Trump looked sick and he looked scared. Like, he never thought he was going to win. He was only running to enhance his brand. Exactly. Yes.
He's a dog who caught a car. Thing. Yeah.
Oh, boy.
I mean, honestly, though, I think you should be scared if you win the presidency, no matter who you are.
Big job. Yeah.
You really should be. Thanks, Glass and Candy, for the definition. Transhumanism is when humans start replacing parts of their bodies with mechanical replacements.
Is that what that means?
Things as simple as a pacemaker can be called transhumanist. It has nothing to do with social justice. I don't know. I've heard liberals talk about transhumanism too. I don't know.
See, I just learned something. I never heard that before.
Me neither. Caddy Catastrophe 2. Any thoughts on ice in Minnesota?
I don't know what that is.
Well, the immigration enforcement.
Oh, ice. I'm sorry. I was thinking because it's winter and it's Minnesota. Oh, my God.
Immigration and Customs Enforcement.
Right. Thank you.
Yeah. No, sorry.
I'm not completely as stupid as I sound.
No,
okay.
It's fine.
In Minnesota specifically, yeah. My brother and sister both lived in Minnesota. My brother was there for 9 years. My sister was there for like 15 years. There are large communities of Somalis and Hmong. From Cambodia.
That's right. And Laos.
And Laos, large Lao community. I was unaware that a lack of documentation was a problem up there.
I'm unaware of that too, because it seems to me like these people were brought in, especially the
as Hmong, refugees.
They were former CIA.
Exactly.
Asset.
Exactly. They were working for the CIA or working for the military, and we brought them as refugees.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is that basically in these refugee situations, basically everyone packs into a C-130. They land at whatever U.S. Air Force base they happen to land at, and then that's kind of like where you live. That's how Dayton ended up with a ton of Vietnamese.
And Bismarck, North Dakota, and St. Louis with a ton of Kurds, Iraqi Kurds.
So
exactly
random.
Right.
I mean, there's a certain beauty to that, but it's also very strange. Thanks for the $10 from Unsung Pat. We'll sing your praises. George Washington warned against the dangers of political factions in his farewell address. Political parties could become potent engines of faction that could lead to the erosion of national unity. It's true that the founding fathers did not anticipate a republic with political parties, but they quickly formed.
That is true.
By the 1800 election, they were basically what we see today. Mm-hmm. They even had their own media outlets and everything. I just like this quote, and then we have to do another story. HV to ADK, I will live in Montana, and I will marry a round American woman and raise rabbits, and she will cook them for me, and I will have a pickup truck, maybe even a recreational vehicle. I've always thought about having a recreational vehicle, and just like the commitment and the gas mileage are like the reason I wouldn't do it. But it looks fun as shit.
It does.
Okay, so let's talk about this report out of the New York Times. There's two reports out of the New York Times. Let's talk about the Afghan zero units. This is more your purview. Bad. So the United States recruited, maybe you can explain what a zero unit is. Under the old Karzai Ghani administration that ruled Afghanistan from under U.S. occupation from 01 to 2021, the local Afghans who were kind of collaborators, let's just say, were served in these zero units. Some of them were brought to the United States, kind of like those Laos and the Hmong and all those people. A lot of them were really mistreated and neglected upon arrival. At least four of them have committed suicide. And now Rahmanullah Lakhanwal stands accused of shooting two National Guardsmen in D.C. Basically, by all accounts, he was mentally ill. And I mean, for that reason alone, he should walk and be institutionalized. But the thing is, apparently these guys, when they call in for help, they're told, oh, we can't find you in our computer. They don't get work permits because their names are a little bit misspelled. Basically, we're not taking good care of them. No. And they're really in a bad state. And I got to just say, personally, when I was in Afghanistan in 01, I remember talking to people and they thought the U.S. was, as the preeminent superpower in the world, would work miracles. They would tell, people would say like, oh, now that the Americans are here, they're going to rebuild all our highways. We're going to have skyscrapers all over the place. We're going to have, everything is going to be beautiful within months. The Afghans, just because their state was so bleak, they radically overestimated our degree of competence and our ability to do things efficiently. And I was like, no, you don't understand. I'm from a city that can't build 1 mile of subway tunnel at all. Okay, like we can't do anything. It's not going to be like that. I was trying to just explain how slow and dysfunctional the U.S. government can be. Anyway, I just wonder if that feeds into the psychology here. These Afghans are like, I've made it to the promised land, and the gap between that level of expectation and the reality, you know, basically made them crack.
I think that it's darker than that.
Tell me.
I think that you get recruited into not just the CIA, but this very specific CIA unit. And they start taking you out in the middle of the night to do raids and to kill your fellow tribesmen, right? People who are members of your extended family, just because the CIA disagrees with them politically. You're given no training. You're given no treatment, no therapy, no nothing. Just come with us and shoot that guy. And it's enough to make people crazy. You know, most people can't take the pressure of committing serial murder, which is really what it comes down to, or mass murder. And then we say, oh, don't worry, we're going to bring you to the United States and it's going to be the land of milk and honey and you're going to be fine. If you need it, you can get therapy. And then they move into what you just described. There's nothing efficient about the United States. There's no therapy that's being given. There's no work permit. There's no nothing. We throw them into this country where they barely speak the language, if they speak it at all. Mm-hmm. They can't work. They don't know anybody. They're completely out of their element. Can you imagine leaving the Afghan desert and then ending up in, let's say, Denver? What the heck are you going to do?
It's just got to make your mind explode.
Yeah. And then at the same time, the U.S. government has just turned its back on you and they tell you, well, you're on your own.
Yeah, that's, and I guess many of them also are losing certainly members of their extended family, right?
Yeah.
We basically turn a long extended families, which is common to Afghans, into a nuclear family. And that's also a culture shock. New York Times says that the Trump administration is having trouble figuring out what to do with these survivors of these drug boat drone attacks in the Southern Caribbean. Yeah. There was thought of sending them to El Salvador, to that prison, right, the CICOT prison, but that was ruled out. And basically the problem is, here's the thing that gets me, John. The administration officials are admitting that they don't want to try these people through the courts, because if they do, the legality of the attacks is going to come into question. The rationale is going to come into question. But I'm like, if we're going after drug traffickers, isn't the main point to arrest them and then threaten them with charges and find out who their bosses are?
And speaking of which, the Washington Post is reporting right now that the House Armed Services Committee is ending its probe into the boat strike. So we will never get answers to those questions, Ted.
So that, yeah, I was trying to read between the tea leaves. Does that mean like it's over, go home, nothing to see here? Or does it mean we've finished our inquiry and you can expect a report from us later on?
No report. They've only been inquiring for 3 or 4 days. Oh, you would need, 6 months for your investigation to do the investigation. No, the White House put pressure on Republicans in Congress, specifically on that weak jellyfish, Mike Johnson. And so there will be no investigation into the boat strikes.
Ridiculous. John, thanks for joining me. As always, always look forward to these mornings with you. We are back here with Deep Program. Scott Stantis from the Chicago Tribune will be filling in for John tomorrow, Thursday, 9 a.m. Eastern time. Friday, John will be back, 9 a.m. Eastern time. It's all call-in time. So be articulate, be pithy, be short, as Robbie suggests. Please stay tuned to the TMI show with me and Mila Chan. That's coming up at 10 o'clock Eastern time. In other words, just in a minute or two. If bear in mind, Friday's show, just to remind you, is a Rumble exclusive. Only Rumble, not YouTube. No YouTube, only Rumble. Thanks, everyone. Bye, John.
Bye-bye.